Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From Lower Manhattan, the center of the financial world, this is Money Talking from WNYC. Good morning. I'm Jeff Greenfield. Joined today by our regulars, Rana Faruhar of Time Magazine and Joe Nocera of the New York Times. This week's sudden ouster of Citigroup CEO Vikram Pandit has sparked a conversation not just about where that bank is headed, but also what it says about those banking giants once dubbed too big to fail. Citigroup is still the third largest bank in the country by assets, and its immense size was causing problems even before the financial crisis. Pandit became CEO after Citigroup bought the hedge fund he ran, and he spent some of his tenure aggressively driving the bank to higher profits. So, Rana, the new CEO of Citigroup, Mark Corbett, a virtual lifer at Citi, is this a sign that what we used to call banking is back? I mean, the staid, responsible, and even boring banking, could that in fact be the new face of Wall Street?
I think it is. I think it's been a long time coming, but we've known it's been coming, and it's here. And I think if you look at the sort of types of these different leaders, Vikram Pandit, as you mentioned, was a guy who used to run a hedge fund. I understand that a lot of people on the Citibank board were not keen about the fact that they paid hundreds of millions of dollars for it, and it was eventually written down to zero. So you have this kind of high-flying global intellectual type contrasted with, as you say, a much more straight-ahead conservative banker. And I think that reflects where banking's going. Lower profit margins, higher capital requirements, and banks are going to have to act more conservatively in general.
But part of the reason he was ousted, or left, I should say, is because he wasn't high-flying enough on some level. Because, you know, the problem for banks these days is they still, their boards and their investors still want them to make a lot more money than they're actually capable of making in this environment.
Speaking of which, Jamie Dimon of J.P. Morgan Chase and Lloyd Blankfein of Goldman Sachs are now the only two heads of the major banks and Wall Street firms to have survived through this financial crisis. So what are they doing right?
Well, that's exactly it. They both still have big trading operations. They both still make money. Pre-crisis, these were the two CEOs who did the best job of sidestepping all that subprime toxic stuff that tripped up Citi and Bank of America and Merrill and so on. Post-crisis, although they've had their stumbles, they both made money. Jamie Dimon's J.P. Morgan makes so much money that they could absorb a $6 billion hit from the London Whale and still have a profitable quarter, which is pretty amazing.
So for you future would-be CEOs of banks, remember Joe's advice. Make money. Now, beyond that, Rana, I noticed that George Will, no left-wing columnist, is saying that the banks that were too big to fail might be just, as he put it, too dangerous to permit. Mm. Is there some sense that the notion of breaking up these banks is moving beyond a left-right ideology?
I think it is. I think you see thoughtful people on both sides of the political spectrum realizing that we probably need to break up the system to make it a little safer. I don't think that if Romney were elected president that you're going to see him actively go after Wall Street, because a lot of his campaign contributions came from Wall Street, which was a big shift, of course, because the banks gave a lot of money to Obama in 2008. I think if Obama is reelected, you're absolutely going to see a push towards tightening Dodd-Frank, towards splitting up commercial and investment banking and generally making banks smaller.
It's worth remembering that the Dodd-Frank reform law that was passed a few years ago really does create incentives for banks to get smaller. They have this category of super banks that they have to have higher capital requirements, more onerous regulation. They're not going to be able to trade for their own accounts anymore because of the Volcker Rule. And at a certain point, if you're running a big bank, you're thinking to yourself, it's not worth it. You know, I can get a higher return on capital if I just get rid of the stuff the government really doesn't want me to have and become a pure bank again. So it's not only being driven by, Vikram Pandit's leaving. It's also being driven by the regulatory apparatus.
And I guess we should mention that the chair of the board of Citigroup that had a hand in the departure of Pandit has himself said, we got to get rid of some of these extraneous,
absolutely.
Non-core functions.
I think you might see, you know, the global operations at Citi going one direction and the U.S. card business in another, for example.
So, as we do every week, we're going to take a look ahead to next week and actually perhaps a week or two beyond that and the stories that we're going to be watching. With me again, Rana Faruhar with Time Magazine and Joe Nocera of the New York Times. Rana, What you looking at?
So I'm looking at the spate of earnings announcements that we saw this week and what it signals for the stock market going forward. We saw companies like IBM coming in a little below expectations. You saw Google, which actually accidentally published early, coming in way below expectations and really disappointing the market. And I think it's interesting because these are two companies, particularly IBM, that have been very well managed. And when you start to see their profit margins shrinking, that doesn't bode well for everybody else. And I think that it may mean that we've seen about as much gains, aside from possibly a short rally after the presidential elections, that we're going to see this year in the stock market.
So just to be clear about this, these could be canaries in a coal mine signaling not so good news for the broader economy?
I think so. I think that, you know, for a long time, corporate profit margins have been up. They're actually at record highs right now, but we're starting to see a pushback. The slowdown in China, the slowdown, the problems in Europe and elsewhere in the world are starting to hit some of these big blue chip companies.
Joe, a little more than 2 weeks to Election Day. Is that fact blinking on your radar screen?
It most certainly is. We have a raft of economic statistics coming out between now and the election, and let me just toss off a few. New home sales, October 24th. Consumer confidence index, October 30. Motor vehicle and construction spending, November 1. And then the biggie, the following day, 4 days before the election, we'll be getting new unemployment statistics.
And perhaps another tweet from Jack Welch.
Let's hope not. This month, as we all know, the unemployment rate went from 8.1 to 7.8%, and Welch sent out a tweet that basically said it's a conspiracy to help Obama get reelected. It is not a conspiracy. However, it did raise a few eyebrows. And so the question is, now that the unemployment statistics have been politicized, how will both parties react to whatever comes out November 2nd?
You know, that's such a big story, but I'm really going to be watching the housing numbers carefully, too, because there are some big studies that show that people actually peg their sense of well-being even more so to housing prices than to growth or unemployment.
And for the first time in 4 years, housing seems to be coming back.
Yeah.
We'll be watching those stories as well and all the week's financial news at WNYC.org/business. You can also take this program with you as a podcast, available at no charge from iTunes. I'm Jeff Greenfield. This is Money Talking from WNYC. Thanks for listening.